by constantly and regularly attending Bhagavatam class, and by serving, rendering service to pure devotees, all which is troublesome to the heart becomes completely or nearly destroyed, and devotional service is established as an irrevocable fact. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 45. Tatogni Madhito Rajan Amuncha Mukatorusa Mahimni Virudam Kartum Sanvataka Ivatyaye Tatogni Maruto Rajan Amuncha Mukatorusa Mahimni Virudam Kartum Sanvataka Ivatyaye. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Benson Prabhupada Ki. My dear King, at the time of devastation, Lord Shiva emits fire and air from his mouth out of anger to make the surface of the earth completely treeless. The prostrators also emitted fire and air from their mouths. Purport. In this verse, do you repeat? I don't know. Okay. In this verse, Vidura is addressed as Rajan, which means O King. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that a Dira never becomes angry because he is always situated in devotional service. Advanced devotees can control their senses. Therefore, a devotee can be addressed as Rajan. A king controls and rules in various ways among citizens. Similarly, one who can control his senses is the king of his senses. He is a Swami or Goswami. The Swamis and Goswamis are therefore sometimes addressed as Maharaj or King. Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyana Ganeshwakaya Sakshu Militam Yena Tasvai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chintanya Manubhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Swabadantika Vancha Kapa Tarubhyas Chakripa Sini Bhavacha Patitanam Pavani Bhuvasha Bhavi Namo Namaha Mukham Kavati Vachanam Pangalangaya Te Giringyat Kipavram Bandi Sri Guru Jnatharina Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Sri Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. You're welcome to this Srimad Bhagavatam discussion. We're continuing in the matter of the activities of the prashetas. And last time, His Grace Ananta Prabhu gave the verse that explained how they came out and they saw that the earth was covered with trees and they were upset. So today we're going to be continuing with a verse that explains what they did after they saw that the globe was covered with lots of trees. So we're going to try to shoot for a rhinoceros today. If we can kill a rabbit in my little dissertation, probably that would be good enough. So bless me that I can say something for the advantage of everyone and for my own purification. So here it is said that just as Lord Shiva at the time of the dissolution of the planet emits fire that puts the whole cosmic manifestation to end, the prashetas, out of mystic city which has been acquired due to long and severe austerities, were able to set all these trees ablaze. Now, Prabhupada's purport is very short, and we can pick out one very important word Prabhupada uses in this particularly one paragraph, and that word is anger. Now, after 10,000 years underwater, They saw Shiva, they saw Vishnu. They come out and the first thing is they get angry. So Prabhupada is saying indirectly that if after 10,000 years of austerity, of meditating underwater, you come out and you still fall back to this basic anattas, you know, lust, anger, greed, calm, crowd, lobe, indirectly is asking, so what's the point? What's the point of spending so much time performing very arduous, painful, excruciating austerities when the very basic, how it said, anattas, one cannot overcome them? And there are so many stories in the scriptures to back this up. Another good example is the story of Subhadra Muni, who also ran underwater, spent so many years there, trying to exclude or cut himself away from civilization. And then he, underwater, he sees two fishes kissing, and he comes out and is like, I have to let off all this calm inside me, you know, lost energy, and he gets married to so many wives. But the interesting thing in that story, which I think we should just link together, is that in Krishna book, in the story of Kaliya and Garuda, it is said that Garuda could not kill Kaliya because Kaliya had a blessing that if Garuda goes anywhere close to the Yamuna River, he will die, because there's a pre-story that Kaliya was picking serpents from Nagaland, indiscriminately killing them. So Subhadra Muni cursed Garuda, saying the day he comes anywhere close to this river to catch fish or anything, he will die. So Kaliya, having that idea, runs and takes shelter there. Now Prabhupada explains in the purport, he said Garuda is not subject or subservient to anybody's cause. He could as well go there and still catch Kaliya and kill him, and nothing will happen. But just to respect Subhadra Muni's cause, he didn't go there. But that didn't mean Krishna wasn't angry, because Garuda is Krishna's servant. He's not different from Krishna. He carries the personality of Godhead every time. And how can you curse someone like that? That is his nature. He has to eat fish. He has to eat snakes. You know, that is his nature. So out of false ego or pride or anger or whatever, he pronounced the curse. If you come here, you'll die. So Prabhupada explained in Krishna book that his fall down actually was because he had cursed a pure devotee for no reason, who was just following his basic nature. Now in this same verse, we see the Pashitas perform 10,000 years of austerity. They come out, and the first thing is they get angry. And Prabhupada always makes this explanation that the difference between the yoga system or the Ashtanga yogic process is that it's painful, it's long, it's time-taking, but there is no guarantee that you will get to the end. Now, Bhakti Yoga, in quote, is simple. In quote. You know, it's simple for the simple-minded. But there is a guarantee, Naya Bikramana Susti, that you will never fall short. Each time these sages fall short, they have to restart again, because each time you use your energy or your shakti or your siddhi, you need a anger, calm, crowd, lust, anger, whatever, you lose all that shakti. Then you have to start from square one and re-meditate and however it is done, you know, but that's their problem. But the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that whatever you stop this lifetime, whatever you have a seeming fall down, they use the word seemingly, because it is said that on this part there is no loss and there is no diminution. So a devotee actually doesn't fall down in the real sense of it, because he has the chance to always continue from where he stopped previously. And to this effect, Prabhupada explains, it says that the real dhira means someone who is sober. The real dhira is one who can control his senses. And the first verse of Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam, Manasa, Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vedam, Vipasta Vegam, Eta Vegam. It's a dhira. It's a one who can control the urge to speak, tongue, all these urges. That is the real dhira. Not sitting down on the water for how many years, not standing on one leg. And because yes, that gives you a particular kind of control over the body with intentions and with a result in mind. Now, the devotee puts his senses under control, not with the intention to become a master of his body, but with the intention that his body becomes a servant of the Lord. So two people trying to control their senses. The yogi wants to control the senses so that the senses are subservient to him. You know, the body does what I want it to do for my own enjoyment. The devotee also is trying to do the same thing, but he wants the senses and the body to be subservient to the service of the Lord. Two people trying to achieve the same thing, but two different purposes. Now, because one is directly offering his senses, body, and mind and everything to the Lord, there is, like, you call it, there's a guarantee that no matter what happens, there's a safe part. Okay, if you fall, no problem, you can always continue. But for the yogis and the materialists who are using different procedures to control the senses, for their own self-aggrandizement, for their own glory, they say puja lo pratishta, for their own worship and adoration, there's no safe path. Once you lose it, back to square one. So that's the beauty of devotional service, that by consciously and gradually following the steps of bhakti, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, that one can achieve exactly and even more than what the Astanga yogi, the Karma yogi, the Jnana yogi will achieve by going through so much painstaking austerities and procedure. And fortunately, in Kali Yoga, we have neither the lifespan, neither the brain, neither the time, neither the place to perform Astanga Yoga, to perform proper Karma Yoga, or to perform proper Jnana Yoga. So it is recommended in this age that the only way, Kalo Nasteva Nasteva, is Harinam, Harinam. Chitama Prabhu clearly says that in this age of Kali, the only means to attain liberation is by executing in Harinam Sankirtan. But the point is, at some point, eventually, the devotee understands that engaging in Harinam Sankirtan is not just for liberation, you know. At some point, he knows that I'm not chanting Hare Krishna because I want to go back to Godhead. So that is a little more advanced. But, you know, worst case scenario, okay, you want to get out of this place, fine. Focus on the holy name of the Lord and purify yourself and come to that stage whereby you can understand that, okay, I am an eternal servant of Krishna, Jivara Swarupa Nitya Das, and my eternal constitutional position is to render service to Krishna. But how do we get to that point if we're still dancing between Kam, Krodh, Lobh, lust, anger, greed? And Gita explains that these three gates are the gates leading to hell. And not just hell in terms of heaven and hell, like, you know, the normal Christian distinction, but hell in terms of living even on the material, in this material world. Hell in terms of the senses constantly telling you what to do, constantly directing you, constantly feeding you, constantly, so you become practically Godas. And that's the opposite. Goswami means master of the senses. Go, senses, Swami, master. In a situation whereby you cannot control the senses, then you become Godas. The senses are constantly telling you, move, sit, talk, act, like that. So, until and unless we understand our constitutional position as eternal servants of Krishna, then we understand that the senses, the mind, the body, the intelligence are meant to be used in the service of Krishna. And one who comes to that platform, he is the real deer. The very first verse of Upadeshanamrita says, one who can control the urge to speak, mind, genital, etc., all the six urges, he is fit to be a dhira. And in spiritual life, it's something that is, it goes hand in hand. One cannot be restless in his mind or body Restless in intelligence means not having proper restless in intelligence means either not having proper understanding of Shastra, or restless in intelligence can also mean not even knowing how to apply Shastra. So there's two restlessness in intelligence. It's either you don't know, or you know and you don't even know how to apply it. You know, they say there's a proverb in English that says, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Not that's knowledge. But wisdom is knowing you don't put tomato in fruit salad. So that's one thing. So sometimes we have we have all this gyan, you know, but either out of one of the two restlessness, we know it but we don't know how to use it, or we don't even know. So it's best you don't even know than you know and you cannot use it. What's the point? And a very good story of this is Karna in Mahabharata. He acquired so much knowledge. Karna was practically better than Arjuna. Arjuna's saving grace every time was Krishna. And people knew it. But Karna had this curse that kept dancing on his head that the day you need this thing the most, you forget it. So what's the point? It's like you study for an exam and you know you can practically recite the whole textbook. And you go into the exam hall, you put your pen on the paper, poof, everything is gone. It is just, it's terrible, so what's the use? So it's the same thing. If we acquire all this gyan, all this knowledge, but we don't come to the point of understanding that we have to apply it in our day-to-day life to gradually overcome these problems, kam, krodh, lobh, and here the real problem is krodh. After 10,000 years of austerity, they come out, and the first thing that hits them is anger. And by a simpler process, Prabhupada is saying, the scriptures are saying that by a simpler process, less painful, less time, we can acquire even quadruple, five times the benefit. And it's not something that is far-fetched. It's not something that is out of our conception. Prabhupada will always say, he says, I have come here to say, I came to the West. Did I do magic? Did I show you any gold? Why are you following me? And the disciples laugh, you know. Because people have CDs, there's so many yogis in the world, in India who went and were doing magic. So many were still doing the magic. They were drawing things from air, this CD, that CD. But what was the intention of the followers they had? They had followers who wanted that thing they were bringing out from thin air, or wanted the ability to do the same thing. So when you get that, then what? Then you want something more. On the other hand, Prabhupada was not drawing anything out from thin air, but because he was connected to the powerhouse, he could do that and even more. So people naturally saw that this was something transparent and authentic. And to that effect, they said that the devotee doesn't try to develop any mystic CD, because mystic CDs and powers have limits. I am 10 times strong, you can be 15 times strong. There's always someone stronger than you. So what's the point? But if you're connected to the ultimate Ishwara, Yogeshwara, the master of all mystics, then what's the use of having any power? You know, you surrender to Yogeshwara Krishna, and he takes care. He covers and protects his devotees. So, having this at the back of mind, the question then should be, then how should a devotee overcome these three kam, krodh, lobh, moh, lust, anger, and greed, which here, the main focus is anger. And Prabhupada says that just as the king controls and rules in various ways, the one who can control his senses also is a king. And that's why sometimes we refer to gurus as Goswami or Maharaj, because they can control their senses. So the question is, how do we control the senses? That's the $1 million question. How do we properly control the senses? Now it is said, if you want to look at it analytically, it is said that the intelligence should be used to control the mind, and the mind controls the senses. Now, but if your intelligence is not intelligent, that might sound confusing. If your intelligence is not intelligent, how can you control the mind, which controls the senses? So what is that intelligence that you have to use? Sastra. If you don't have the basic knowledge of how to, there is no way that you're going to do it. And there's always, every appliance comes with a user manual, you know, how to operate this thing, how to. So how to control the senses, Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna tells Krishna, he says, sorry, Krishna tells, I think Arjuna asks the question first. He says, I can control the wind, I can do this, but my mind I cannot. He says, how do I do this? And Krishna says, by constant practice and detachment. Constant practice, it doesn't mean that, okay, today I want to control my senses and today I have to have 100% control of my senses. Sorry, not like that. It doesn't work that way. You know, you can see, I mean, we barely live how many years in this? 50, 60, 70? These people were 10,000 years performing austerities to control the senses. Still they didn't get it. 10,000 years, you know, imagine. So, the word is emphasized, constant practice. It's a constant, it might take, some people it takes less time, depending on how much practice, some people it takes a longer time. Constant practice and detachment. Detachment, properly explained in the purport, is detachment from the object of the senses. You cannot have the diabetes and be taking insulin, which is the constant practice, but you keep eating sugar. What's the point? So, constant practice of taking insulin medicine to reduce the diabetes and detachment from things that have starch, sugar, will help you cure diabetes. So, constant practice of devotional service, Ravanam, Ketanam, Vishnu, Sumaram, up to Atma, Nivedana, complete surrender, and detachment from these things that pull you back, hand in hand, you know, then we can hope. Now, hope against hope, which means, you know, how much hope do we have in Kali Yuga? We have a lot of defects. Our body is ignorant. We make mistakes. We, you know, there's a lot of defects. We have the four defects, and we have the clashes, the stubbornness. There's a lot of problem already. So how do we have the hope that, okay, if I constantly do this and I'm detached, that I will even get there? What's the hope? What's the guarantee? That's another question. How do I believe, or how do I know that if I constantly engage in the process of bhakti and I detach myself from the object of the senses that pull me back, how am I sure I will get there? Because Krishna says you will. Krishna gives. He says in 1866, if I'm not mistaken, he says, abandon all kinds of religion, surrender unto me, and I will relieve you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So there's a guarantee. If you do it, I will take responsibility. But if you don't, and Krishna says in the same 18th chapter, says, if it's enough, I've explained everything to you. But if you decide to act on your own, then you will be lost. So we have the free will, like Prabhupada explained last time, we have the free will as living entities to do what we like. Krishna doesn't tamper with it. And sometimes people say, if God really wants us to come to Him, why can't He just make us just love Him, you know, just make us come back to Him? But He can, but He won't. Because what's the essence, what's the idea of love if it's by force? You cannot say, I love you because you have a gun on my head. If you don't love me, I'll blow your head out. Yeah, definitely, I'll definitely love you like that, you know. But if, despite everything, without any pressure, I wholeheartedly give myself to you, that's real love. Now, in this age of Kali, the only way we can actually show, or even try to show that we have some love for Krishna, is by constantly calling on His names. Now, if that is too difficult to understand, even in material relationship, when you love someone, you want to be with that person. You every time want to either speak to the person on the phone or you want to call the person. So calling Krishna's name is synonymous to a lover who is constantly calling his beloved. Either, and it goes on, this is either Sravanam, you're talking about your beloved, Kirtanam, sorry, you're hearing about your beloved, Kirtanam, you're talking about your beloved, Vishnu Smaranam, you're remembering about your beloved, up to completely giving yourself to the beloved. So in this part of bhakti, it's all structured in a way that for us to actually engage on that path that gives us the assurance, like Krishna said, if you surrender unto me, I'll remove all sinful reactions. Do not fear. That there's a path that has been mapped out that if you follow any of these or all of these, if you can, there's a guarantee. You buy a car and it says, if you use this car without having accidents, it will serve you for 2 years. But if you go bashing the car everywhere, so that's the guarantee. Krishna is saying, if you follow and you don't act whimsically following your own mind, you won't be lost and you'll come back to me. Now, doing this, then there is a possibility, there is hope, there is guarantee that we can overcome anger, which is the main focus here. Crowd. And anger is, anger in its physical form is, okay, you talk to me, I don't like it, or something upsets me and I express it. That's gross anger. You know, it's even easier to manage. But when you have anger in this subtle form, it's terrible, it's worse. It comes out in different perverted ways. Just like you have, for example, lust in its gross form is bodily attraction between either male and female or whatever. Now, lust in its subtle form is the constant crave for pujmo pratishta, fame, adoration and worship. Now, someone might be able to suppress the physical or the gross form of lust, or the physical or the gross form of anger, but the subtle one is still there. And that can come out in hate, that can come out in envy. You know, so one side is to solve the gross form of anger or the gross form of greed or the gross form of lust, but worse than that is the subtle one which remains most times. Now, when we look at the procedure of from Shraddha to Prem, it is said that some of these gross anattas still follow the practitioner or the sadhaka, even up to bhav. There is still some trace there. Anyway, this is a different topic entirely. But that's to show how much these anattas are. They are really ingrained inside you. It takes a long time to take them out. That even up to the stage of bhav, sometimes these things are still there. So that will make us understand how much practice we have to have. It's not that I do today, then I forget about it for 3 years, then I come again and I do, and then I leave it for another 1 year, on and off. The result cannot be the same. So if we consciously and conscientiously follow what the acharyas have given us, and it's not difficult. The acharyas have shown how it's done, down from previous acharyas up to present day acharyas, up to living acharyas. We can see how it's done. There's a proof. It's not something that they said, oh, this person did it, but we never saw. You know, there's a proof. It's been done. It is still being done. So if you try exactly how it's been done, there's a chance that there is hope. So we only have to give ourselves wholeheartedly to the process. And then we can be sure that we can rise above the level or the platform of lust, anger and greed and become real dhiras and goswamis. I don't know if anyone has a... I don't want to talk too much. It's quite an interesting topic that we can go on and on and on and on. But if anyone has anything to add at this point, we can take it. Prabhuji says I have 45 minutes. This is 35. We can use 10 to see.
Thank you all for so much explaining the mechanism of anger and how to rectify. Here, within this story of Pachetas, this is interesting topic actually. How can I actually understand this apparent contradiction? On one hand, the Pachetas exemplify Nirguna devotees, right?
Yeah.
And now is there mentioned the anger, which is which we usually consider is like a tamaguna reaction on this point. How can I understand this anger of Nirguna devotees? What is this? Or, in other words, we have an example of Daksha, which also was angry, right?
Mm-hmm.
To Lord Shiva, and now we have anger of Pachetas for anger to the trees.
Mm.
How can we solve this contradiction of two different kinds of verbs? Is there some difference?
So if I understand your question, you want to know why they were angry, or what is?
How can I understand the Pachetas anger? Is this an anger of conditioned soul, or is severe anger, or just
okay
different kind of anger?
Okay. Well, there are two ways to look at it, because it's a good, how do you say, it's a good point you brought up the example of Daksha also. First, like I explained, we look at it from the level of the process. Now, Daksha was not a Bhakti Yogi in the real sense. He was a pure, I'll use Kama Yogi, because his main was procreation and sacrifice side by side. I procreate as a Prajapati, I do my sacrifice, I get the results. That was Daksha's line. Now, the Prashetas, technically speaking, were not Bhakti Yogis. Because they got their guideline from Shiva Gita. Technically speaking. So, that places them already in a particular category. They didn't get Uddhava Gita or Ahila Gita or Bhagavad Gita. They got Shiva Gita. So, following in that line, technically speaking, if you want to look at it, just technically speaking, we'll come back, they were not pure Bhakti Yogis, in one sense. Now, if we come a bit further, what is the difference between the anger of the Prashetas and, say, my anger? That's the question. What's the difference between the Prashetas' anger and, say, my own anger? Now, the difference is that, yes, the Prashetas had anger. Yes, anger is, it's a stumbling block on part of devotional service. Yes, Prabhupada explains here that without being sober, one cannot make progress. But one cannot remove the fact that just like, I'll give an example to explain this. Just like Hanuman getting angry for the service of Ramachandra. His anger is the same anger. The same anger, you know, he's angry, he's upset, and he acts. But his anger has a particular direction. Now the Prashetas come out of the austerity or whatever, and they see that our father has not been in service, and the whole place is neglected. Now, one can extrapolate that this anger is born out of a sense of duty, in one sense, that these things have to be done, they were not done. Then as we go further, anyway, Brahma comes in and tries to check them. But we see that their anger was actually born out of, we'll say, a misdirected sense of duty. Yes, your father was not there to do the duty. Yes, trees have overgrown. But blowing everywhere up was not the real solution. So, misdirected sense of duty and anger for selfish reasons, which is the kind of anger I will have, is definitely not the same. This is the simplest way, without getting into details of tatwa. The simplest way to understand is one is misdirected sense of duty, and one is just pure selfish interest.
Okay.
Mine will be pure selfish interest. But these people have a duty that has to be done, but not properly applying the correct procedure. So it's just the simplest difference.
Thank you for bringing out this very important actually point here also. Sometimes, because also we saw the Prabhupada was also So this is the also Vishwanath Chakravarti explains actually in this case that when the Jetas came out and from the sea, the sea of the kingdom is neglected.
Yeah.
And Vishwanath Chakravarti explained that the instruction of the Vishwas, you take care of the kingdom.
Yeah.
So they became angry because they couldn't perform their service.
Yeah.
So this is the previous verse before this finished. This is a very important point that we can actually the anger can be spiritualized, right?
In the sense that
it is there for the pleasure of the Lord, pleasure of the mission.
Mm.
That's not selfishly kind of intention. It's not from the ego, as was Dakshas, because he was insulted because he was not given the respect
by
Shiva.
Yeah.
But the anger here is guided because they couldn't execute
their service. Yeah.
Which is, this is Hanuman the same, and also Arjuna, when he fight, he was angry.
Yeah.
Thank you for this.
No, it's a very good point, because like you said, someone can say, Prabhupada says Dira and devotees should not be angry. Why is the temple president angry at me? Or why is this guru angry at me? Or why is this senior devotee angry at me? So that the devotee should not be angry doesn't mean you should act stupidly and expect them to caress your head. You know, just because that the devotee should not be angry is not the reason for you to also misbehave. So there's a check and balance system. Now, if the devotee or this Goswami or whoever it is angry out of his own selfish interest, that's a different story. But if he's angry to check the neophyte or the sadhaka to bring you back in line, it's a different thing. And like you rightly said, it's anger. I mean, it is said that practically every anatta except envy, practically every anatta, either lust, greed, anger, can be used or dovetailed to Krishna consciousness except envy. That's why in the spiritual world, there is no envy. Everyone is constantly trying to help the other person to serve Krishna. That is the only form that you cannot dovetail. Every other form, the gopis were lusting for Krishna, but it's a different kind of lust. People were greedy. Madhu Mangala was greedy for food, but it was a different... No, so every other form can be dovetailed. But envy, and that's the problem also. Like you said yesterday or the day before, why is this devotee advancing more than me? Why is he getting so much mercy more than me? It's just envy. And sorry to bring it up, Prabhupada also said, my god brothers are just envious. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj gave an instruction, they didn't do, I'm doing it now, they're criticizing me. They're envious, it's just envy. And it's a problem. It's the only form of anatta that we cannot dovetail. And we have to always have it there. The moment you start seeing yourself mentally doing plus or minus about a devotee's life, just stop it. It won't go anywhere. It won't lead to anything useful. Because there is no way to bring that back to Krishna consciousness. It will not happen. It's a waste of time, waste of energy, and it will lead nowhere. But yes, like you said, every other form, anger, all can be used in Krishna's service. And there are so many examples. Arjuna, Hanuman, name it. So many.
Right now, I'm in this process when I don't have this rasa. it's really tough for me to.
I think rasa is a bit far for now. If you want to talk about darkness, Prabhupada said, Tamasima Jyoti Gamaya, come out first of darkness before you start thinking of rasa. Rasa is far for now.
I think this, you know.
Yeah, so if you yourself admit, because I'm not the one to evaluate your spiritual life, if you yourself admit that you're in darkness, Tamasima Jyoti Gamaya, come out. Come out of the darkness. And how do you come out of the darkness? Oma gyana timirandasya, gyana gyana shalakaya. Chakshumitam yena tasmai siguru. He said, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Guru Maharaj, who has opened my darkened eyes of my heart, which is covered by ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. Now, what is that knowledge? That's the question. So the Guru is constantly trying to remove this darkness, like you have said. We are all in darkness. You know, you have identified yours, which is one step. So some people would know they're in darkness and they try to get out. Worst case is when you are in darkness, you don't know you're in darkness, and when they tell you you're in darkness, you refuse to accept you're in darkness. That's the worst stage. But if you yourself admit that I have a problem and you know the problem, then the next thing is look for a cure. And every cure you and I can think of is here.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is mind suffering. You know, the pushing of mind because sins of the past and everything. And I'm hard to dealing with him. And I'm too attached to the mind. So it's just...
So like you are saying again, I'm still pulling from what you're saying. You've identified that you're attached to the mind, and because you're attached to the mind is constantly telling you what to do. Now the only thing that can control the mind is intelligence. And I said, if your intelligence is not intelligent enough, how can you control the mind? So your mind cannot be controlled by repressing it. Bhagavata explains that those who externally reject the object of the senses, but are constantly dwelling on it. What does it call them? So they are pretenders. So you now have identified that your mind is constantly feeding you these things. Now, false repression, stop it, will not help you. So the only way to control the mind is by intelligence. And intelligence, you and I cannot get from artificial, how do you say, absorption or just conjuring some rasa or whatever. We have to study. Only by proper intelligence can you beat. It's a proper sense in the morning, you take your shoe and you beat the mind 100 times. Before you sleep again, you beat it. But what is that beating? It's not physical beating. It's by using proper gyan, or best is even vegan, to control the mind.
I must know my position.
Your position in...
Position like that I'm the soul with subtle body, so I must...
Of course, I mean, if you don't even know who you are, then you might as well think you're your mind. First you have to understand, First you understand that I am the servant of Krishna. And because you're the servant of Krishna, your duty is to use this mind, intelligence and senses in the service of Krishna. Now once you know that this mind is not meant to serve me, then you stop being attached to it. But because you think this mind is my property, it has to serve me, then the mind tells you that, you know, in fact you cannot do this. I'm going to make you serve me. But when you make the mind understand that, hey, you are not my property, you belong to Krishna, and because you belong to Krishna, you do what he says, then the mind has a boss who is stronger. You understand? You cannot control someone who is stronger than you. It's just not possible. So to control someone who is stronger than you, you have to take the help of someone who is stronger than both of you. It's just common sense. If I want to control, say, the president of this country, I have to look for someone who is higher than him. And I don't know who that is. You know, let's say the prime minister. If I want to control the prime minister, I have to go through the president, because I don't know if it works like that here. The president, yeah, something like that. So if you want to control the mind, which is technically stronger than you, now what I mean you is that because you're conditioned, in your conditioned state the mind is stronger. But in your lightest, the soul is never contaminated, but because we're conditioned now, we have the material body, we're under the influence of the mind. So in order to surmount that, we have to connect to someone stronger than the mind. And it is said that the intelligence is higher than the mind. And I keep saying, you know, if your intelligence is not intelligent enough by proper application of Shastra, Vigyan, you know, then what's the point? If it's bankrupt, if there's nothing in there, what are you going to use to control the mind? So your intelligent bank account has to have something inside.
Yeah. One comment on this is very interesting, actually, topic. Very relevant, actually. Sometimes we experience a situation that, you know, that I know it's right. You know, intelligence said, I know we are in this body, but I'm so weak. I know it's Krishna is there, the bodies are there, I understand all these things, but mind overpowers us.
Okay.
This is a situation which is very common.
Okay, now I understand.
And then what is the one of the important principles here is that if we are influenced with passion, rajas and tamas,
mm-hmm.
we cannot apply this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step, how can we, when this mechanism can the intelligence takes over control over the mind, mm-hmm. is we need satguru.
Yeah.
Because if we are the tamas and rajas,
no.
The mind is not in his natural state.
Mm-hmm.
Because the origin of the mind is sataguna.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is rajas, tamas, then the desires and conditions just within our subconscious, overpowers our intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
They overpower the knowledge of Shastra.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the first thing, we read and list up, we help to cultivate sattva-guna.
Yeah.
And the best way is association.
Yeah.
Out of 10 principles which generates the our modes,
mm.
the association, mm. what kind of association we cultivate is the most powerful influence in which modes we will be. So that's why the association of the mode is the special mode and the special master is so important, because so we can, you know, be rise to the mode of goodness, mm. and then we can apply this knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
We will, you know, we will wake up on the Mandalarchi, we attend the classes, because
we're on that level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then mind will be subdued by the high authority.
Intelligence.
Which is guided by the Shastra.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the intelligence is guided by the false ego. By hunger.
Yeah.
I'm enjoyer.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
This is the mentality which comes out of the Rajas and Tamas.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So the solution now is so important.
Yeah.
So that we can rise to the sattva-guna, so that we can the intelligence has this power to, you know, to pacify the mind. Oh, mind, okay. Yeah. Desires? Yes. Detachment. Huh?
Yeah.
As you mentioned,
detachment.
Constant practice means constant practice of the sattva bhakti,
yeah.
and the principles of sattva guna,
yeah.
and detached from the rajas and tamas, as mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the recipe which, and so many times we neglect this principle. Huh? Mm. I heard this so many times. I know this body. Yes. Yeah. But I'm so
weak.
It's not time. You know, it's not. I'm not natural. Huh?
Mm.
I'm not natural because I have these desires, you know.
Mm.
Mind is wild when it's not in sattva-guna. You bring up your desires, experiences,
yeah.
you know. The propaganda of the world is so strong, you know. Yes. It's not, you know, I understand what I'm going. You go in the darkness, you know,
yeah.
you will degrade
yeah.
sooner or later. Thank you for being this. This is very important topic for the practitioners.
Mm. So first, rise to the level of sattva-gun by constant practice. Then your mind, then your intelligence becomes strong enough to control the mind. So that's the summary. First, come out of, this Prabhupada says, tamasima, come out of your ignorance and passion. Jyoti gamaya, go towards the light. Sattva-gun first. Then the intelligence is strong enough to control the mind.
And then you mentioned that and the strongest intelligence is Vyavyasa Atmika. When we follow the instruction of Guru Parampara, if we accept our intention, our will, our intelligence to that we want to follow the instruction of Guru Maharaj and Prabhupada, that is the strongest way. How can we, you know, overcome mind? This kind of because then out of that the strongest determination comes out,
This is what I wanted to hear.
This propagation, this is how he came to the West, because the instruction of his guru was topmost, his life and soul. When we come this is the top surrender, this is the top power of intelligence. Because we subdue to the Guru Parampara's will. And this is we don't have independence. Then we invest all our energy, which is the key factor to Guru. It means Balaram, means Nityananda, means
Krishna. Absolutely, absolutely correct. I don't know, Prabhuji, did I help you?
Yes.
Thank you, Guru, for wonderful enlightenment and discussion.
Forgive my.
No, all the.
My talking too much.
No.
All the sleeplessness, all the hunger. Just disappeared, right? Just right now, I'm saying, huh?
Arriba. Jai, Vanchakavatari
Vasudeva.
Jai, His Grace, Munu Shri Amrahu Ki.
Jai.
Dantara Srimad
That means passion. Rajasthan, that means.
The spirit wants to do, but the body is the flesh is weak.
Conditioning.